Hi, I'm Adam Geis.
I'm David Lurch.
We're hosts of the EdTech Distilled podcast, which is a part of the Education Podcast Network.
Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
We've had self-harm and suicide ideation cases more and more on the elementary school level. And that's shocking to people, but honestly, it's happening more and more.
Welcome to the Leader of Learning podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Dan Krynas, and this is where I help educators grow their impact as instructional leaders. Because my research and leadership experiences have led me to understand that someone like you, regardless of your role or your title, can have a tremendous impact on your organization. I chat with inspiring guests who are truly making an impact as instructional leaders. Whether this is your first time listening or you've come back for more, I hope you've subscribed to this show on your preferred podcast app so you don't miss any of the great episodes, topics, or guests. Anyway, I'm so glad you've tuned in. Now let's get started. Hey there, Leader of Learning. Welcome to episode 133. Man, education is tough right now, right? Listen, we all know that during the pandemic, it was very difficult to be an educator, to try and balance everything that was going on in the world with work, and who knew when you'd be working remotely or in a hybrid schedule. Even this school year that many people have been back in person and now potentially with masks optional and essentially doing away with most of the restrictions that COVID unfortunately placed on us, it is still really tough. Social emotional learning has come to the forefront over especially the past couple of years as educators and students and families and everyone has had to deal with the lingering and lasting effects of the pandemic. And such is the case, of course, for our students. In this episode, I talked to Rachel Miller, who's the founder and CEO of an organization called Close Gap, and they specialize in making social emotional learning and connections between students and staff so much easier. I know you're gonna learn a lot and get a lot of value out of this episode with Rachel, so coming up is my interview with Rachel Miller. Welcome back, Leader of Learning. In this episode, it's my honor and privilege to bring on a guest, Rachel Miller, who is the founder and CEO of Close Gap, a nonprofit that makes it easy for schools to support the emotional health of K-12 students through daily mental health check-ins. I feel like this is a super important topic all the time in schools, but has really kind of come to the forefront even more so, of course, during the pandemic. And I think this school year more than any other of my 16 years that I've been in education. So Rachel, welcome to the show. I'm really excited to talk to you about this. But before we do, if you could just introduce yourself a little bit more to the listeners, I'd appreciate it. You know, who you are, where you are, and what you do.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me, Dan. It's great to be here. So as mentioned, I'm Rachel Miller. I'm the founder and CEO of Close Gap. I'm here in Santa Monica, California. It's nice and sunny, so no complaints over here. And Close Gap is, as you mentioned, a 501c3 nonprofit that's focused on supporting the emotional health of children. And when I first started the company several years ago, it actually started as a donation platform. And we pivoted. Once I started spending more time in schools, I noticed the severe need for mental health data. Schools and districts really need that social emotional data to make more informed decisions. And so I ended up pivoting the company, and now that's what we're doing at Close Gap.
Before I even ask you any questions, I appreciate that introduction. I do want to be honest with you and my audience when I say that a lot of times, and other podcasters will know this, we get a lot of emails and communications from companies, from people asking to be guests on our show. And sometimes, many times, when organizations reach out or publicists reach out, I either turn them down or I ask for a sponsorship. And I decided not to do that because I really do believe that social emotional wellness and mental health of students is just so important these days. And that's why it was important to me to talk about it and not approach it from such a business type angle or ask for money for this kind of just an interview, a conversation. And so I just wanted to be really clear about that because I am genuinely interested in talking to you about this and not looking to turn a profit myself. So
I love that.
Yeah. I guess what I want to start with is, of course, why it's so important. And I'll preface this by saying that you may not know this, my listeners probably do, that I've spent this school year in a couple of different roles. Currently, I'm an instructional coach for digital learning, and I would actually care to wager that much of my experience in this role in terms of mental health is that of the staff that I work with, supporting the teachers who are just trying to hold it, you know, keep it together and get through this school year, get through the pandemic. It's been very, very challenging. But earlier this school year, I was an assistant principal, and I think maybe even more so than almost every other position in education, with the exception of maybe some service providers, guidance counselors, and clinicians, people in those positions really deal with mental health a lot. And I saw everything from drug use to gang participation to self-harm to eating disorders, honestly, and that was in, no joke, only about 3 months that I spent in that role and in that time. So that's some of my experience, and I'd like to hear it from you. You know, someone who's really in the thick of it, and you know, created this organization out of that need. What is it, and why is it so important?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you so much for sharing all of that, and just based on what we experience, you know, within a month's time.
I'm sorry to cut you off. What I forgot to mention is that was at the middle school level.
Yes. Yes. It's starting so much earlier than people realize. We have, just to, you know, offer a note on that, we've had self-harm and suicide ideation cases more and more on the elementary school level. And that's shocking to people, but honestly, it's happening more and more. So I'll kind of just start with a few statistics that we focus on and to just share to the wider public, because it's important to know. So 46% of youth in the U.S. have experienced at least one traumatic event. And what that means is just half of our kids are walking around processing something that's really complicated that they probably don't have the ability to process. And then on top of that, 50% of all lifetime cases of mental illness start before the age of 14. So just, you know, it's like our kids are already going through identity issues, puberty, you know, getting annoyed at their parents, trying to get good grades, all of the things. And also half of them are experiencing emerging mental health issues that they probably don't know how to navigate at that time. And in addition to all of that, the average delay between the onset of symptoms and intervention is 10 years. So that means if a student shows some sort of depressive issue, some sort of behavioral, you know, symptomology, it's going to take us 10 years to get an intervention in place. So the way that we look at it is, our kids are really suffering and we're really missing the mark. Like, we're really not doing what we need to be doing for them. And then when we take it more to, so that's kind of the state of affairs. And then when we look at the touch points that kids have for emotional support, we know, okay, we have parents and family, we have community, and we have school. And we know that not all parents and family are created equal. So we can't rely on that one if we're talking about meeting the needs of all students. It's really hard to make sure kids access community resources, especially if they don't have that first level of support. And so we're left with school. And inside the school building, it's literally everything you just mentioned, right? It's substance abuse issues, it's eating disorders, it's trouble at home, it's all of the above. And so what I found was I spent a great deal of time in schools, and it just became increasingly obvious that we needed to build a solution to make it really easy for students to share and make it equally as easy for educators to intervene in real time and over time. And so that's really, that's what Close Gap is all about. And that's what the company was born from, is this immense need on the part of our youth.
I have to go back to something that you just said, because it struck me as you said it, the word easy. You said that Close Gap basically makes it easy or easier for students especially to share what they're dealing with in terms of trauma and their own mental health and wellness. I know that in my experience as an educator and as an administrator especially, it hasn't been very easy for students to share what's going on with them, especially as the level of trauma, let's say, increases, so does the difficulty in terms of speaking out and advocating for themselves. You know, it might be different if you have concerned and caring parents, but unfortunately, the reality, I'm sure as you know, is that some students don't have that kind of advocacy. And so I guess my question is, how can you say that, basically? You know, how can it become easier for students to really share?
Yeah, it's such an excellent question. So I think prior to digital mental health check-ins, what kids had to do, what students had to do, is either walk to the school counselor's office. So just think about what that requires. If you need help, you have to like ask your teacher if you can go. Then you have to like walk down the hall. You have to knock on the door. That's hard. That's not easy. Like that is very challenging for a student. So you either do that, or in the best cases, maybe you're like really good friends with your basketball coach, or you like know the school psychologist really well from prior issues and you can bring it up. But that's not the case for most students. And so that's really where the benefit of software comes in. We know that students are way more honest with software. So if we ask them, hey, how are you feeling? How is it going today? What's going on at home? What's going on in your friend group? They're way more likely to tell the truth. And that's what we've found. And the idea behind Close Gap too is that we wanted to create a safe digital space where students would actually share. We didn't want to make a survey. We didn't want to give them another chore to do. We wanted to actually create the experience where they would tell us what was going on. And because of, you know, and we get self-harm and suicide reports very often, far more often than any of us would want. And, you know, students really do share. And I think it's because we've managed to create that safe digital space. And that's really what everyone needs to be doing, right? If you want a student to tell you the truth, you need to make it their experience. And if you can accomplish that, then they're way more likely to share.
Having said that, I have a couple of follow-up questions. One is, and I think you explained this in your answer there by talking about how to make it easier for students and in making it digital. But I guess I would ask, why digital? And the reason I ask why is because I think that a lot of people have said and noted that especially the younger students and children, the effects of the pandemic are such that the negative effects are that, you know, maybe it really took away from interpersonal connections and relationships. And some may argue, I don't think I would, but some may be listening or would argue that isn't that still kind of taking some of the personal nature of the relationships and the connectedness between students and educators or clinicians kind of out of the equation?
Yeah, the way that I thought through that, and there are parts of me that think that that is true. And I think that's a really good question to ask. But because we don't have enough adults in the school building, like we have to introduce some form of technology. And so, you know, if I would have my way, if I had a magic wand, I know if you had a magic wand, we would say that every student gets a warm 10-minute welcome in the morning where we say, we're so happy you're at school. We're so excited to see you. You know, how's it going? And if we, you know, if we had human beings to do that, that's what we would do. But because we don't have enough adults in the school building, it's a great use of technology. Like, this is one of those moments where tech can actually be used for good. And that's how we've wanted to use it. And so, and I do think it's important to think through what portion of it can be technology only and what portion of it needs to be from a human, or like what I call human touch, like the touch of a human. And so I think that, you know, the check-in, saying, hey, how's it going? How are you feeling? Asking a series of questions. We can rely on tech for that. We can do that. But if a student says, I actually want to talk to an adult, which is a part of the check-in, you know, they say, hey, I want to talk to an adult, or they, you know, report something within the check-in, within their message, because they can write in, you know, their personal messages, then we bring, you know, then that's a human touch case. And the teacher, you know, will follow up, kind of be the first responder, or the school counselor, the school social worker, or school psych will come in. But I do think that it's good to continually ask this question to make sure that we're not relying on technology too much. It's like tech should only be used for the bare minimum, and the rest should be a human.
I'm really glad you said all that, and I kind of wanted to push back a little bit, but to be honest, I really do believe that making this type of a process digital helps tremendously, and I'll give you an example, and I want to maybe break the third wall a little bit here with my audience and share a little bit about me and my family on a personal level. Just earlier this year, my son, who's a new middle school student, he's in sixth grade this year, and who suffers from what I would consider at least mild anxieties, kind of always has, was having some trouble in school, socially, you know, with other students. And it took a lot from me as a parent to urge him and encourage him to speak to someone. But, and to credit the school and the counselors at the school and the teachers as well, from what I understand, the teachers must have a system fairly similar to yours, but probably not as complex and built up and easy to use. But some kind of system, whether it's a Google form or what, where the student can actually kind of check in with his or her homeroom teacher. And then, depending on you know, what they're feeling and who they need to talk to, a little bit of a triage situation from there, who they need to reach out to. And I think twice, actually, it really benefited my son, who was able to speak to the counselor, and the counselor ran some mediation between my son and some of the other students, and really did get him to feel a lot better. So I believe in and support that kind of a system 100% as a parent and as an educator. You know, one of the other things, I guess, that I wanted to put out there to my listeners as well, and I did want to get your opinion here. I know that's not necessarily what you do, but I think about opportunities that maybe we don't get enough in schools. You said you spend a lot of time in schools, so that's why I'm interested in your opinion. As a young teacher, I remember this actually, I'll make a long story short. I was in a fraternity in college, and sometimes we did these things called good and welfare. And we basically went around literally in a circle, and we just talked about what was on our mind. It didn't have to do with the fraternity. It didn't have to do with school. It could be life in general, like anything, relationships, whatever. You know, if it was your turn to speak, you got to speak, and no one was able to interrupt you, and you just spoke your mind. And I actually took that philosophy with me into the classroom. And when I ran an advisory group earlier in my career, that's what we did from time to time. Not every time, but I gave the students opportunities to just open up and talk. And I guess I'm wondering from you, are we doing that enough? And if not, like, what opportunities can exist in classrooms and in schools to get student to get this kind of mental health more on the table and not have it be so difficult for students to speak out and speak up?
Oh, I love this question so much, and I don't think it gets asked enough. I think that that is truly why Close Gap has done so well, is because it's finally a moment where students can do what you just described. And I think that there's immense opportunity to move beyond a check-in for that, right? So it's like, that's cool if we can capture that in a check-in, but students should be doing that in the classroom. Students should be doing that at home, right? They should have a moment of presencing, getting in the present, reflecting, and being able to verbalize that. There are so few safe spaces where youth can just speak their truth, even for a short time. And so I can imagine how beneficial that was for you during college. And I think that, I mean, truly, I think classrooms could, right, we could introduce this into the classroom probably more than once a day. I was going to say once a day, but a couple times a day. And that's so beneficial, even just as a mindfulness practice, but for a way for educators to become more familiar with their students, right? I think something I see a lot is, especially in, you know, schools that are very under-resourced, it's really challenging to teach and to be there with the students. And I think that that's a really nice way to humanize everybody, right? We all take a second to actually speak our truth and share what's going on with us. So I love that idea. I think that school staff members could do that as well as district leaders.
We did, actually. In a district that I was in a handful of years ago, as restorative practices became more... So what I was explaining about what I did in my advisory group earlier in my career, I don't know if the term restorative circle really existed yet. This was in like 2008, 9, 10 area. But knowing now what I know about restorative practices and restorative circles, that's really what I was doing. And then as restorative practices got introduced at the district I went to after, we did do that with staff. And, you know, I thought it was a great opportunity to kind of bond with each other, but you know, like we've already said, just really open up about things and kind of get things on the table, which I don't know that we can do enough, really. I know this may be a bit of a silly question, because I think if we lay people had our way, we would probably change policies enough to where we can embed social emotional learning and restorative practices like this more. But I guess I'm interested to know your opinion or your advice here. Like, what advice would you give to teachers, schools, districts who may say, like, we just don't have time. We have to cover all these standards and we have to make sure that our students are ready for all these tests. When are we going to find the time to check in with them and figure out how they're feeling socially and emotionally?
I would say try it, which is such a simple answer. But when I first started the company, no one was doing check-ins. Check-ins were not a thing, right? We had like check-in, check-out for tier twos, but no one was doing check-ins. Everyone said, oh, we don't have enough time. Students aren't even going to be honest with us. We're not going to do this. And then when we experimented with it with a few schools, it became very apparent within the first week that, oh, students are going to tell us what's going on. And it only takes a few minutes each day. And what it does is it moves everything from that reactive approach, right? Like, so reacting to yesterday's fires, reacting to behavioral outbursts that happens, and it moves everyone to a proactive approach. Okay, these are the 5 to 10 students that are really going to need some help today. We're going to go help them before something happens. And so what I would recommend is try it. And maybe it's not a digital check-in. Maybe it's not closed gap. Maybe it is something that happens in homeroom and they just test out what it's like to check in with all the students quickly and to see what happens. And I would really say you're going to see a difference within the first week or two.
Yeah, I would agree. I think back to a time when I did one of those circles, if you will, in my advisory group as a young teacher. And I had students just, I don't know, this one session is the one that I remember most, because I had students who were just really opening up, and I think it meant a lot to me, because I knew that was like the moment when I finally earned enough of their trust and created that atmosphere of trust among them that they felt comfortable to share. And one of my tougher students that year, and I don't mean tougher like he was such a behavior problem, but tougher in that he was just tough to get through to. He broke down in tears literally one day.
Wow.
Because it just meant so much to him. That the reason he just got emotional, because he just felt so supported by everyone from not only what he was sharing, but what they were sharing. And just that kind of vulnerability just meant the world to him. And he just, I guess he didn't know how to handle it. And again, I kind of break the third wall a little bit. You know, my advice to teachers would be to just find a few minutes, whether it's a few minutes, like you said, every day or not, find a few minutes to really hear and listen from students. And I'll tell you another story too, really quickly. I as an instructional coach, I went into a classroom a couple of years ago. I was supporting this teacher, and a part of me, the instructional trained administrator side of me, was like, why aren't you covering the you know, why aren't you really teaching? It was kind of just a discussion that was happening. But the more I stepped back and really thought about how the teacher was using, she was basically using something that happened and the climate, whether it was the climate in the school or the climate in society, I don't even remember what they were covering. But when I really thought about it, I applauded the teacher for taking the time out to really address it with the students, because I think it meant a lot to them. So my advice is just to find those opportunities and really seize the moment, because I am a true believer in the fact that you can make time for what is important to you. And I hope that, you know, as an educator, the mental health of your students is important, and try to find ways to build that in. Before we start to wrap up, what have we not mentioned? You know, I would like to hear maybe a little bit more of the nitty gritty about your you know, the digital check-ins and how the whole system works, you know, because it intrigues me. And I know you've mentioned a little bit about the digital check-in part and all that, but you know, what can it do for students and staff at schools?
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's two main pieces. There's the student check-in and then the educator dashboard. And something that I should share before I forget to, because sometimes I do, is that it's completely free. So please keep that in mind. So the student check-in, again, it's a safe digital space. It's different for different age groups. And we ask pretty basic questions. How are you feeling? What are your somatic sensations, right? So we start to bring in some cognitive behavioral therapy. What's your energy level, right? Are you low energy? Are you like off the wall, way too much energy? And then we ask some foundational questions, like, have you eaten breakfast today? Did you have some food? Do you have some food in your belly? How's everything at home? What's going on in your friend group? For older students, we ask, are you feeling like you're worth less than others? Are you feeling lonely, right? So things that really inform their lives based on, you know, how old they are. And we take all of that information and we funnel it into a dashboard that educators can use in real time. So we have a triaged list. So you'll see your urgent students, you'll have your, you know, good to go students. They don't need any support. And you can follow up with them by messaging them. You can, of course, follow up with them in person. And there's a number of other features where you can, you know, track trends over time and see like, oh, this student has been, you know, kind of trending down, if you will, for the past month. Really start to intervene.
Sorry to interrupt. I'm just wondering, and I didn't want to forget this. Are parents involved at all?
Yeah, so you can invite parents. The majority of our schools don't, but we do suggest inviting parents to each student account and inviting outside therapists, because the idea is really to create that team of healthy, trusted adults around the student. And so we also say invite basketball coaches, invite everybody that is in that student's life. So, but most of our schools haven't done that just yet. I think the pandemic impacted that decision making, right? The pandemic changed so many different things, but that's typically how it works now. So educators have that dashboard they can use, and students also, following their check-in, choose from a library of self-guided evidence-based interventions. So not only are they sharing with the adults, hey, I need some help, this is what's going on, but they're labeling, understanding, and regulating their emotions. So it's really, we consider it an intervention. It's not only this way to like get the data and make sure that the important adults have it. It's also this moment where students can check in with themselves and then learn to regulate, right? They might decide to do deep breathing. A lot of our older students do journaling, which I think is the reason is what you mentioned. They need a moment to actually express themselves. And so, you know, we have journaling and a number of other interventions that they can do there at the end. And it's totally free. So if there are any educators who are like, yay, this sounds great, like, please go and take advantage of it. We made it for you. It's totally free and always will be.
That's excellent. You know, I think back to those few months that I spent this year as an assistant principal, and I think about the fact that, and I hope for the school's sake, this gets corrected sooner rather than later, but I felt very alone as an administrator, that I didn't have enough support when it came to issues with students, you know, whether it was disciplinary or whether it was, like in this case, you know, mental health and supporting them. And you know, basically we had one school psychologist who was one full-time psychologist for grades 6 through 12. And then we had one or two part-time psychologists or social workers. And then all of our guidance counselors, for the most part, dealt with high school grades, with the exception of some of our special ed students who did see them somewhat regularly for counseling. But it just never felt like enough. And so I guess, again, I'm speaking to my listeners now. If you are in a position, or your school is in a position like that, perhaps, you know, implementing a system like this would be the way to go, you know, so that it doesn't become so cumbersome and burdensome for any one person or just a couple of people to feel like they have to handle all of this, of the many mental health and social emotional issues that students are having, and you know, that may or may not lead to discipline issues. I just know firsthand how difficult that can be, and so it's something that I wish I had as an assistant principal. And you know, I haven't even seen it in action, but it sounds really great. And I know from listening to what you've had to say here in the last half hour that the mission, your mission, and that of the organization is really on point with what students and staff at schools need at this point. So I thank you for your work. I thank you for your time. If there's anything I didn't ask that you want to, you know, leave us with, that's great. Otherwise, please let us know how we can find Close Gap and how we can reach out to you or anyone else for more information or any questions that we might have.
Awesome. Thank you so much for saying all of that. Yes. So if you're interested in getting started, signing up with Close Gap, you can go to closegap.org. And if you want to follow us on social media, we try and post funny things that brighten your day. So come and follow us. And our handles are always closegap_org. And you can come and hang out with us there.
And if schools are ready to, you know, implement this, I know you said it was free, but how do they go about actually starting to, you know, roll it out?
Yes. So what I would recommend is go to closegap.org, and we have a get started guide and a number of implementation resources. So a response guide, kind of teaching you how to respond to the different check-ins, a PD presentation, truly everything that you would need. So feel free to go to the website, check out those resources. And if you still have questions or just want to say hi, you can reach out to me. My email is rachel@closegap.org.
Excellent. Thank you again for your work. Thank you again for your time and coming on here and explaining all of that, because I truly believe that it's such an important mission that you're on. And it's, you know, times have been tough. It's just so important now more than ever. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you haven't done so yet, don't forget to subscribe to this show on your favorite podcast app. If you enjoy the content covered on this show, I want to ask you to do this one thing for me. Please share it. The biggest favor you could ever do for me is to please let others know about what I am doing and how I am helping educators grow their impact as instructional leaders. I hope you can share this podcast with other educators, leaders, friends, or anyone you think would love listening and learning. If you're interested in leaving a positive rating and review of this show, links to do so are always in the show notes for every episode. For more information about me or this show, and to access the great content that I share, please visit my website at leaderoflearning.com. That's where you can find my online courses, YouTube channel, blog, how to connect with me on social media, and even ways that you can support the show, like donating or purchasing Leader of Learning merchandise. Thanks again, and remember, no matter who you are or where you are you are a leader of learning.